In the past year, actor John Lithgow has portrayed Winston Churchill, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, and Rudy Giuliani. In the new movie Bombshell, he plays the late, disgraced, one-time head of Fox News, Roger Ailes.
What's the appeal of playing a grotesque, if I can use that word?
Well, it is appealing. I don't know. I'm in the impact business. You want to make people either laugh, cry, or scream out in horror, or I guess cringe now, just because you're part of a story that's being told. And one of the really good parts is always the villain, if there's a villain. You know, I'm the ogre, I'm the troll under the bridge. And that's a good part. You know, Caliban is a great part. You know, monsters are great parts. Especially if they're in the service of a great story, and that's what this is.
It's funny, because talking about villain and ogres, I mean, the stakes aren't quite as high when it isn't a fictional ogre or, you know, something removed by hundreds of years of history or something. It's a little raw for people to encounter a character like Ailes, who is, yes, in some ways a villain, but also a very real person who very recently was committing bad behavior, whatever you want to call it. So do you still savor it like you would savoring it a fictional villain? Is a similar kind of motivation for you?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure what the difference would be. I must say I'm a little, it's a weird thing to say, but I'm glad that he is not with us. Not that I would be uncomfortable having him see what I do, impersonating him, but it means that as of 2 or 3 years ago, he became history. So it's a piece of history instead of a reflection of what's happening right now. I know Charlize and Nicole have a certain ambivalence about Gretchen and Meghan, what they think, you know, what they're going to say. Have they seen it yet? I'm free of all that. But I don't know. I just knew what my job was. I embraced the role of malevolent force and the creator of a poisonous culture. And that's what it is, against that background, that everything is played out in this story. And it's an exciting thing to do. And besides which, I was working with fantastic actresses. I mean, the story is their story. Everything is in reaction to a dark force, and I'm the dark force.
Does the fat suit provide a kind of moral protection for you internally for what you kind of have to perpetrate in this film?
There again, wonderful question. I don't know about protection. It completely transforms your sense of yourself, for sure. That and the makeup. I mean, I didn't feel like myself. It is quite remarkable how that changes you. Certain other things can do that. Fake teeth can do that. Or shaving your hair all off. I've never done that before, but I know I would feel very, very different if I did that. I worked with a great director early on, one of my first films, the Twilight Zone film, George Miller, the Australian director. When we were talking about costume and makeup and how I looked, he kept making these odd suggestions like, hey, what about a cold sore? Should we have a cold sore? And I said, I don't know, that continuity would be hard. I'm not sure why. Well, you say, well, what about, let's make your hair black. I thought, dye my hair black? George, what exactly are you after here? He says, I want to find something that takes you away from your image of yourself. Which was a remarkable thing to hear from a director. In a way, he was doing me a favor. And that was early on in making movies, but I always do like to find something that takes me off my own sense of myself. And what can be more extreme than adding 100 pounds, not to mention adding about 2 pounds of prosthetic makeup?
Do you ever think about just packing on the pounds yourself, Christian Bale style?
No, I don't do that. But when I'm playing a fat part, and now I've played two in fairly quick succession, Winston Churchill and Roger Ailes, I just don't give a thought to what I eat. I eat with abandon and really enjoy what I'm eating because I know I don't have to even think about it. I'm afraid I don't think about it much anyway. And I think I must lend myself to fat characters. My whole career, I've been invited to play fat men, even when I was much thinner than I am now. There's been a whole lot of them with more in the pipeline, I have to tell you.
I was thinking about Winston because he is fat suit, irascible, flawed, messy, you know, like Ailes in some sort of superficial ways, but he's a much more lovable kind of galoot. And I feel like there's some similar strain of thought I want to pursue here, but did playing Churchill help give you insight into the unique pressures of being a political leader?
I'm not sure I thought about it that way consciously. I thought much more about, I mean, it's nice of you to ask about Churchill. I'm a little tired of talking about Roger, as you can imagine. First of all, Churchill was made prime minister for the second time when he was 75 years old. And when the series ended, he was 80 years old. He was an old man. He was a man that I discovered in reading a lot about him. He'd had a very unhappy childhood, grew up with early on a terrific sense of his own failings, and he was neglected and dismissed, and he went to Sandhurst instead of Oxford or Cambridge. And his entire life was, he was a very courageous man, but he was also full of insecurity, and I always had the sense that he was overcompensating for a sense of his own inadequacies and his own unhappy childhood. Well, that gets even more complex when you're growing old and you feel you're losing your viability and your vitality and you're covering up an awful lot. That, to me, was, rather than thinking in terms of his politics, you never really got much of a sense of his politics. You knew he was conservative and hated socialism, and thought that that was the worst thing that could happen, Attlee, or having the Tories voted out of office. But so much of it had to do with just his own fear of failure, his fear of being put out to pasture, and his fear of growing old. That's a great place to work from when you're trying to create a character, even if it's a very real character. As compelling and commanding as Churchill could be, and as witty and delightful and self-mocking as he could be, I think there was also a lot of vulnerability there.
So you look for the humanity. I mean, as an actor, you look to empathize or step inside the insecurities or the woundings or whatever of the character you're playing. Were you able to do that with Roger?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel he was, he was very ill. He had terrible health, had diabetes, and he could barely walk. He had such pain in his feet. He used a walker and a cane. Yes, he loved to throw around power and tyrannize people. But in my mind, all tyrants have yawning chasms of insecurity, or they wouldn't feel the necessity to run people like that. It's almost like he was staving off something. And then his life was very complicated by this compulsion of his, which was a secret and shameful compulsion. And I just think the shame is there, too. He's not just a villain. He probably hated what he was doing as much as we hate what he was doing.
So you played Ailes, you played Churchill, you played Clinton, you even played Trump in a live reading, you've played Giuliani on Colbert's show. Is it just coincidence that you're becoming all these political public figures, even a lot of contemporary political figures?
Not quite sure how it happened. But in all sorts of ways, I've sort of been dragged into the public arena and the war of ideas and political ideas. I've published this book of poems. I don't know whether you know about that. Dumpty, The Age of Trump in Verse. The arrival of Donald Trump and the age of Trump and Trumpism itself, it scared and angered me in all sorts of ways, and it sort of emboldened me, sort of pulled me out of my shell politically. I've always been a little bit uncomfortable about celebrities holding forth on politics, myself in particular. But it's like, at a certain point, how can you keep silent? And being an entertainer, I've just decided to sort of transmute it into entertainment. My book of poems is satirical skewering of all these bizarre characters in the Trump administration, almost all of whom are long since passed into history because they've all been fired. or walked off the job in protest. To me, it was a lot of fun, and my poems are a lot of fun to read, even though they're fueled by real political rage. And same goes for playing Rudy Giuliani. It's like, what in the world is happening? Is the world gone nuts that this is the man who was conducting our foreign policy in Europe? If I don't make this fun for myself, I'll slit my wrists and jump out that window.
Your op-ed for the New York Times, you talked about how celebrities holding forth on politics, but in the age when a politician is essentially just a celebrity with very few other credentials, it's sort of fair game. So you say it's like it's a form of catharsis or just reckoning with the craziness. Do you bring that actorly quest to see the humanity or the nuances or the yawning chasm of insecurity to all the people that you detest or disapprove of in the Trump administration?
Actually, a close reading of my poems. They don't really bear a close reading. But I certainly show a lot of empathy for Trump. I do pity the man. I mean, I wouldn't be that man no matter what you paid me. To me, I've never seen a man so ill at ease with himself. And it manifests itself in all this bizarre and sometimes farcical behavior. I write a long, long poem. It's like 10 pages long. In fact, I wrote it in the makeup chair, having my makeup applied 17 times for Roger Ailes. And it's very much about Trump, his extraordinary paranoia, his need, his insecurity, his jealousies and his anger at people. He's just in the grips of all that. And he strikes me as a man just imprisoned by his own crazy passions. How can you not pity a man like that? Unfortunately, he's the most powerful man in the world, and he's doing a lot of damage. And tyrants all over the world are imitating him and emboldened and sort of validated by him. This is a bad, bad time. And as I say, I deal with this by laughing at it, but it's no laughing matter. And in fact, that's a quote from one of my poems.
I was going to ask if you had any stanzas memorized of your poems.
I think I could recite, if you would like, I can recite the opening poem.
Please.
Of course, it's called Dumpty, and this one kind of explains the title. Trumpty Dumpty wanted a wall to stir up a rabid political brawl. His Republican rivals, both feckless and stodgy, succumbed in the end to his rank demagogy. Dumpty's wall made no earthly sense, a boondoggle bought at an enormous expense, but he promised in speeches, despotic and shrill, he'd make certain that Mexico footed the bill. Trumpty Dumpty kept persisting. More and more citizens started resisting. Sadly, there won't be an end to this tale, at least until reasonable people prevail.